Hi, I'm Danny Glover, and you are tuned into WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Me and my main man, Kalia, making this show happen, enjoying it. We got coming up. Don't forget. Very shortly, we will be in fundraising mode. Of course, you know, we're not in it a lot. We're not in it yet, but we will be soon. And when that happens, we will ask everybody to step up to the plate, help keep WPFW on the air. The reason we can have the kind of conversations that we have on here is simply because we are not encumbered by corporate money. We're not, you know, taking big funds from some billionaire or corporation or whatever. And so we can say what we want. You know, what's interesting is, I've had people, well, Garland, I think you're getting money from fill in the blank, right? Fill in the blank. You're getting money from the Republicans. You're getting money from, you know, some whatever. And I'm like, yeah, well, whatever. That's fine. It's good because it's hard for people to believe. I think what happens is this. You know, people, we are so, our society, as we observe this country, the institutions of this country collapse, right? The political institutions are collapsing. The academic institutions are collapsing. The media institutions are collapsing. As we watch that happen, it's difficult for us to accept that the social, that the intellectual institutions in our own minds are collapsing. That, you know, as we watch this whole thing fall apart, it's very difficult for people to look at this system as an entire system, to look at it in a holistic manner and say, man, this system is bad news. Instead, it has to be taken apart, and we are trained to side with a piece of the system, to say, well, yeah, this part of the system is bad, but that part of the system is good. This part of the system is doing the right thing, but that part of the system is doing the wrong thing. This part of the system is bad, but at least it's a little better than other parts of the system. And for those of us who say, I only see this thing systemically, and the system is unraveling, and it's not like one part of the system is going to come apart and the other one will be fine, you know. One person is going to dismember the system. The system's great. It's like, I'll put it like this. Have I referred to Biden as a fascist? Yes, I have. Have I referred to Trump as a fascist? Yes, I have. You know, have I referred to other presidents? Most all of them as fascists. Yes, I am. Now, I know people that simply say Trump is a fascist. I know Republicans. Well, Biden was a fascist. Why? Because, you know, well, there are those who argue that fascism is the end stage of capitalism. Right. That as capitalism starts to do what capitalism starts to do and fall into, disarray, shall we say, that the only thing that the ruling elite can turn to is totalitarian, authoritarian measures. You know, when you have a system, an economic system that no longer provides for the basic needs of the people. Right. When you have a system where the only thing it does is extracts money from the working class and the poor and puts it in the hands of the richest, and the rich get richer and richer and richer. Elon Musk is worth $500 million. But I could go on and on. There's a handful of billionaires that own everything, and the rest of the people are barely struggling to make it. Right. And now, rather than say Trump is a fascist or Biden is a fascist or that person's a fascist or this person's a fascist, I would put it in a different way. Fascism is when the system no longer provides for the people, and the people are restive. The people are unhappy. The people are angry. The people are trying to figure out what's happening. The people are shaking their fist. And the system now, and the people don't want to cooperate. The system says, do this. And the people start saying, we don't want to do this. This ain't working for us. The only thing that the system can do is crack down on them, is get harder on them, right? Is push down on them, right? And that's fascism. It's the totalitarian system. See, when things are going well in the 80s and 90s, the people here in America were doing okay. 70s, they were doing pretty good. Jobs, you could get out of high school. I remember there was a time when somebody could get out of high school and go get a job most anywhere and buy a brand new car, new. I knew guys that did it. Buy a new car and get an apartment. Imagine right now, if you're 20 years old, if you're 19, 20, 21, any, whatever age, and you got out of high school and you could go get a job working in a, you know, warehouse. And based on that warehouse salary, you could buy yourself a nice car and have an apartment and move forward with your life. That's not happening now. So people then didn't have to, they weren't as angry, as upset, as stressed out. They weren't pushing back. They kind of went along with things because it was working for them, right? Now, at the time, here's what I would argue. What the people in America didn't know was why that was so. You see, as in America, the people here, you could get a job, the things look pretty good. Why? Because the United States government was going around the world overthrowing governments, stealing the natural resources out of these other countries, robbing them blind, murdering, slaughtering, doing every terrible thing in the world. And the American people got some level of benefit from that piracy. You know, the way I put it is the American people were like a mafia wife. Her husband's out there killing, robbing, doing all kind of thievery, cutthroat activities, all kinds of terrible, illicit things. Now, the mafia wife is living in a nice home. She's driving a Lincoln Continental. She's wearing the best clothes. Her kids are going to private school. She doesn't really want to know how her husband's getting that money, but she's living pretty good, right? That was the American people. They didn't really want to know, and they would ignore. And if the government said, nah, we're doing everything on the up and up, we're standing for human rights, the American people would believe it. Yeah, okay, yeah, we're standing for human rights. We were doing the same treachery that we're doing right now, if not worse. But the American people were getting a little bit of a bribe, and the prices were affordable, and it was aligned with what they were making. Now what we have is a system where what has been called by some the Marxists will refer to as the crisis of overproduction. Wherein, what is the crisis of overproduction? The crisis of overproduction, the description of that, and I'm not saying I advocate for or against it. I'm just telling you this is one of the theories, the Marxian theory, right? The crisis of overproduction, and that the Marxists would argue, not a Marxist, but I've studied it enough. I've studied lots of libertarianism. I've studied all these things, so I understand their arguments. The Marxist crisis of overproduction says eventually what you get is you get, as an example, you can't afford a house because there's too many houses, right? There's so many houses out here. The price goes up. The market gets flooded. And here's what happens. Here's part of it. You're working, I don't know, at a factory making Fords. And Ford wants to make its maximum profit, right? So Ford says, I'm going to make lots and lots of profit selling this F-150 pickup truck. Now, what Ford says is, well, I got to buy steel and aluminum and tires. The price of the steel and aluminum tires is constant. There's nothing I can do about that. I got to pay for my shipping of the Fords. I can't do nothing there. I can't get extra profit out of that. I got to pay for, you know, all of these static prices, things that I have to pay in order to make a Ford F-150 pickup truck. There's no way I can get additional profit. Where can I get additional profit? There's only one place. From my employees. I'm paying my employees $40 an hour, but I want more profit. The only way I can make more profit is to reduce the amount I am paying my employees or get rid of some of my employees and replace them with robots and AI and all that stuff. So Ford is able to be, man, they're really good. They fire a bunch of employees. They lay some of them off. They replace some of them with robots. They lower the prices, lower the salaries of the rest of them. They do all of these things. And now Ford can make an F-150. And make maximum profit. Then they say, now that I'll do that, all I got to do is raise the price of F-150s. And I can make even more. And so now they raise the price of the Ford F-150. So they're paying their workers less. They have fewer workers. They raise the price. But we have a problem now. You see, the workers who made the Ford F-150 pickup trucks, who got fired and who make less now, what happened to those workers? They're gone. And they can't afford the F-150. So part of the crisis is when the system beats, abuses, and impoverishes the working class are also the consumers. And now you have a paradox. Now you have a contradiction where the consumers are the ones who are economically beat down by the system so the system could make a greater profit. But the consumers, the workers, are also the people who buy it. So you can make a F-150 cheap, But there ain't nobody that can afford an F-150 because you've done laid them off. And so did the other companies. And you can see that now. What did they say for all of these years? We can't raise the minimum wage because everybody will get fired. It'll be terrible if we raise the minimum wage. But yet, the price of the Ford F-150 and every other thing went up. Everything went up, but they can't afford to raise the minimum wage. And the money that the corporations were making, the profits went up, but they can't afford it for the working class. They can never afford anything for the working class. See, when they say we're going to increase money that goes to the defense budget, all both parties vote for it. But when they say, you know, we need some extra money for college for young folks, we need some extra money for the street, we need some extra money for the community, guess what? What are the first thing they say? Who's going to pay for it? We can't afford that. That's going to destroy our budget. The budget is not for the people. The money is not for the people. The money is extracted from the people. The money goes to the wealthy class. And eventually, you have what we have now. A system where the jobs don't provide enough money for the people to live a decent life. That's what you have. And then at that point, what can you do if you're in a system? You got to get the people fighting against each other, fighting amongst each other. Because if you don't, you know what? You got to find a false. They got to blame something. They can't say this is a systemic. This is a structural problem. This is what this system creates. They have to say, why, if it wasn't for Trump, if the Republicans wasn't in, everything would be fine. And then the Republicans got to say, well, it was the fault of Obama or Biden. If only they wasn't in, it wouldn't be fine. The system always has to find, part of the system always has to say, we're the good part of the system. Why, the bad part of the system, fix it. And then, as you hear me say every week, as Frederick Douglass said, we end up like two slaves fighting over whose master is the richest and whose master got the richest house and there's nothing in it for you. And that's where we end up. And that's where we are right now. And you watch the system unravel. And so what is the system doing right now? The system's looking for more to steal. It's saying Venezuela. Ooh, Venezuela's got oil. Now, let me say this right now. As Donald Trump George Bush lied us into war in Iraq, which he did. Fair enough. But what's happening right now? The Trump administration right now. We're going after Venezuela for drugs. Everybody, if you've got a brain, I mean, I'll put it like this. You have to be so naive or so brainwashed that it's not even worth having a conversation. To look at Venezuela and say, Venezuela has more oil than any country in the world. I think the United States is going over there to deal with the drug issue. That is preposterous. It is clear this is Iraq. Weapons of mass destruction. You know, Richard Pearl, which was one of George W. Bush's assistants. Richard Pearl said, he said, we settled upon weapons of mass destruction. He said it in a speech because we felt that that's something that everyone could come together around. He said it. He said, you know, weapons of mass destruction. In other words, we were going to attack Iraq. And we kicked it around a little bit. What lie do you want to cook up? And he said, we settled on weapons of mass destruction. That's what they do. You see, when they get ready to go to war, they settle upon something. It doesn't matter if it's Ukraine. It doesn't matter if it's Afghanistan, if it's Iraq, if it's Venezuela. They sit around and they cook up a lie and the ruling elite sit around and say, hey, I think this will work. Well, what are we going to tell the idiots out there? Oh, I don't care. They'll believe anything. Well, we can just tell them that we're going into Afghanistan to get bin Laden. We'll say we're going into Iraq to free the Iraqi people from Saddam Hussein, who we helped put in power. He worked for the CIA at one point. We helped put him in power, but we've got to get him out of power because he's evil now. He's our guy, right? Country after country, Vietnam. Oh, we were attacked by Vietnam. What sense does that make? It was absurd. Ukraine. Oh, that was what's the word? An unprovoked attack. That if you look at Ukraine, it's the stupidest thing in the world to believe that that was an unprovoked attack. They got people. I mean, they have Americans convinced that Ukraine, that the Russians just why? In fact, this is what you would have to believe, that if Russia and or China suddenly showed up in Mexico and started building bases in Mexico and started putting troops in Mexico and started arming the Mexican army and started saying to the Mexican army, as Lindsey Graham said to the Ukrainian army in 2016, next year, that was 2015. Lindsey Graham, you can go online and find the recordings of it. Lindsey Graham said to the Ukrainian army, as the United States was building up the Ukrainian army, next year we go on the offensive against Russia. So the U.S. was in Ukraine saying, next year we go on the offensive against Russia. They started building up a huge military force because Ukraine was nothing but a proxy force. The United States built a proxy force to on Russia's border to go after Russia. But you have to believe that unprovoked attack, that the Russians woke up one day and said, oh my gosh, the Americans are on our border. But that really doesn't bother us. Oh boy, goodness, the Americans are putting in bases and missiles on our border. But that doesn't really bother us. It's democracy in Ukraine that we hate. It's absurd. The every one of the arguments is absurd. It's absurd to think that the United States was going in to Afghanistan to stop Al-Qaeda when the United States created Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Look it up. The United States funded bin Laden. We called him the Mujahideen in the 1980s. You can look it up. Zbigniew Brzezinski. They said, what we'll do is we'll draw Russia into Afghanistan, the Soviet Union. And then this is all. You don't have to believe me. You can look it up yourself. We'll draw the Russians into Afghanistan and then we'll support the basically the jihadis. Before they were named Al-Qaeda, they called them the Mujahideen. And that'll hurt the Russians. The United States created Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. And we're supposed to believe that the United States went in Afghanistan to stop Al-Qaeda. They created Al-Qaeda. Did you ever notice this the last few years about ISIS? ISIS attacked Russia. There were ISIS attacks in Syria. There were ISIS attacks in Iran, right? So ISIS is our enemies. Right? But the only countries that they attacked were the countries that we didn't like. They didn't, don't you think it's a little odd? ISIS, jihadis, they never one time attacked Israel. Never one ISIS attack on Israel to this day. And now, a man who we said we have to stop, Al-Jalani, he was the leader of ISIS. He was the leader of this ISIS group called Al-Nusra Front. I'll tell you where you might have saw him recently. He was in the United Nations, shaking hands with Trump, shaking hands with General Petraeus, shaking hands with everybody. A guy who was, the United States had a 50 million, I don't remember if it was 10 or million, 50 million. It might have been 10 million, might have been 50 million. It doesn't matter. We had a multi-million, this is a fact. The United States had a, the United States had a multi-million dollar bounty out for this guy, right? And now he's in charge of Syria, which the U.S. put him in charge of Syria, and now he's our friend because he was always our friend. He was our friend when he was in charge of ISIS and Al-Qaeda and Al-Nusra Front. That was a fake. When we had the multi-million dollar bounty out for this guy, it was a fraud. We knew where he was. We could have found him. But he was our guy. Every one of them is a lie. Every single war they tell you is a lie. And most of the time, the problem is, most of the time it takes people about 5 to 10 years after the war. Generally, Americans. The Americans, I remember sitting in the cafeteria at work. And some guy telling me about, oh, we've got to go into Iraq and we've got to fight them over here because we won't fight them over there. And I'm like, but Iraq doesn't have a Navy, dude. How are they going to get over here? Oh, well, they'll do this or that. Then literally, this is back then, a true story. People remember this. They had these wooden, like, look like planes that a child would make. And they were about 5 or 6 feet long. And they said, these are wooden drones. And that Saddam Hussein could put poison gas on them off the coast of the East Coast and fly them in, which would be difficult because he didn't have a navy. But I guess maybe he'd swim over. I don't know. But they put this on TV and people are like, hey, Saddam Hussein, come on. Then, after all of that fraudery, after all of that lies, and they did this, and this was my favorite one. They came up with this colored thing, and they said, all right, when we get close to, I gotta laugh now, when we get close to having a terrorist attack, it'll be red. And then when there's not going to be a terrorist attack, it's going to be green. And people believed it. And I remember back then, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Red, green for terrorist attack. What do they know? Are they on the phone with a terrorist? The terrorist call them, hey, guys, terrorist attack coming, incoming. All right, turn it red. It's a joke. And now people look back and say, yeah, I guess that was kind of stupid, huh? But in the actual time, they believe it. Here's what I'm trying to tell you. Don't wait for 10 years to realize you're being lied to. The stuff they're telling you right now about Israel, lies. The stuff they're telling you about Ukraine, lies. The stuff they're telling you about Venezuela, lies. Don't wait till 10 years later to look back and say, you know, Garland, perhaps 10 years ago, I should have listened to you when you told me they were lying to you about everything. They always get mad at the guy who tells them that the system's lying to you and side with the system for about 10 years. 10 years from now, you know what they'll be looking back saying, if we're here, gee, I guess we should have saw this coming, huh? Nah. Right now, it's, Garland, you don't know what you're talking about, you idiot. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying, if you, you know, let me, I'm good ready to go to the calls. I'll say one more thing. The whole Charlie Kirk massacre, I mean, assassination. Does anybody believe that story? Does anybody believe that story? That some guy got shot? Listen to this. This is the part. I'm supposed to believe that a man got shot in the neck by a 30-odd six. Now, remember, my background is law enforcement, and I did a lot of stuff with guns when I worked with the FBI. When I worked with the FBI, we had this one thing that we did, and they had, like, every kind of game, every kind of machine gun, every kind of gun you can think of in this room. And we went through these guns one by one, and what they showed us was, this is a gun. They had videos on the gun. If you find this gun land somewhere and it's armed, this is how you unload it and make it safe and all of that. And 30-odd six, and I saw videos on that. Trust me when I tell you this. If you get shot by a 30-odd six in the neck, it's going to take your whole head off. And the heads of the people behind you, they shoot moose with this. They shoot bears with this. And the idea, I'm supposed to believe that somebody got shot in the neck? And the bullet, here's what they said, it's a miracle. Yeah, yeah, that's about the only thing to do that is a miracle. They're lying to us about everything. And I'm supposed to believe the Charlie Kirk thing. It's obvious, not only is it obvious that the whole story's a fraud, it's obvious that the government's in on it because the FBI's giving us a false story. Did you, one last thing, did you know, have you heard what's come out about 9/11 recently? The CIA, some of the hackers, the CIA was following them. They were following them in Thailand. Then they came to the United States and they got tickets. Let me ask you this. The CIA doesn't, do you find it suspicious that the CIA was literally following the hijackers before it happened? Perhaps, I don't know. Perhaps maybe they were in on it. There's so much that's come out about 9/11 that it is easy for me to believe that the government isn't involved as it is for me to believe that somebody got shot in the neck with a 30-odd six and the bullet didn't come out the other side. Those two things are, make as much sense, which is none. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. All right. I'm seeing some other craziness. U.S. to impose 100% tariffs on China. Oh, boy, because that worked out so well before. We already know how that works out. All right. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
My name is Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So, I just heard you talking about the U.S. going into Ukraine against Russia, but you cited the years 2000 15 and 2016. But 2014 is when Russia went into Ukraine. So what, if even by your own statement, what the U.S. did was a response to what Russia did. And Russia, it does have, I believe, for instance, if you look at Putin, here's one thing you can't say about our leaders. They haven't stayed there yet. Trump's trying for 20-something years in the same position. And they have, on average, most of them do not come in as like a civil servant and become like the richest man in the world.
Let me ask you a question. Because I study this stuff. This is what I do. I do international politics and international security analyst. That's what I do. And I've studied this stuff and I know all of this. Let me ask you this. In Russia, right? Putin has been extremely successful economically. The people of Russia keep voting him in. He is the most popular leader that Russia has. Wait a minute, hear me. I'm going to give you a chance. Why are you so jumpy? You want to? I hear what you said, and then as soon as I start talking, I don't get a chance to finish. And it's my show. Shouldn't I get a chance to finish?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So the people of Russia absolutely adore Vladimir Putin. Our own United States polls in the last election predicted that he would get 86% of the vote, and he got 87% of the vote. The first 2 years that Vladimir Putin was in, salaries tripled. He is the FDR of Russia. So if the people of Russia love Vladimir Putin, why should we say he shouldn't be in office for 25 years? Tell me that.
So, do you really believe that Russia is having free and fair elections?
You didn't answer my question.
No,
I asked a question. I said, if the people of Russia love Vladimir Putin, shouldn't they be able to put in the guy that they like? Isn't it their business? Who are we to tell the Russians they can't have their favorite candidate?
I don't believe they're voting him in.
Well, then why is it the United States polls show that? Our own polls show that. Our polls.
I don't know which polls you're citing. But
I could send them to you. I'll give you my email address. My email address is garlandn. Listen, you ask me. I will back up anything I have to say. My email address is garlandn@gmail.com. If you email me, I will absolutely send you the information, and you can call me back next week. Is that fair?
Hold on. Yes.
I said, is that fair? You asked me something, and I say I can support it.
But I can challenge what you're saying. Because on the one hand, you're speaking, giving credit to something that emanates from the U.S., such as the information that supports that he's going to win in a vote, he's going to win by 87%. I'm to believe that. That comes from the U.S. But I'm to disregard all the other information that the U.S. puts out about Russia. That's all I'm saying.
Well, listen, you have my email address.
Okay.
You can send me what you got. I'm a man. Listen, I don't make things up. If you ask me why I believe something, I will always be able to substantiate it and send it.
Yeah,
I am an analyst. So that's all I'm saying. If you ask me, all I can do is send you what I got. You don't have to believe it.
That's true.
But I ain't going to make things up out of the air if I can't substantiate it. That's all I'm saying.
I'm countering you with your own logic. And that on one hand, you're saying believe information coming from the U.S. And on the other hand, you're saying disbelieve.
Well, no. Here's what I'm saying. The poll says he has 86% of the vote. Our poll predicts that he gets 86% of the vote. The actual election, he got 87% of the vote. You don't have to believe the poll by itself individually. But if you take the poll and then you add that with the outcome, those two things match up. Logically speaking, if a poll says I'm going to win by 20 points and I win by 19 or 20 points, you can say, okay, that poll was accurate. Now, if I lose by 20 points, you can say the poll wasn't accurate. All I'm saying is, the outcome aligned with the polling. So therefore, it seems to me logical to assume that it was a good poll. If it was way off, I would say maybe it was a bad poll. Does that make sense?
I get what you're saying, that simplistically, yes, that makes sense. But what my point is, on one hand, I'm to believe information that comes from the U.S. when it supports the position that you're trying to make, and then disregard information that doesn't support the position that you're trying to make.
Send me the information.
But the other things you said disregard. You said that all these other things are lies coming from the U.S.
I said the U.S. government lies to you constantly. Yes, I did.
And I'm not naive enough to think
you think they're telling you the truth?
I don't think that they, no, I do believe they lie, and I'll tell you why I believe they lie in some instances. Because the simple, funny thing is, people can't handle the truth. They end up lying because, look at the mess we got now. These people they refuse to believe the truth. They won't believe the truth when it happens in front of them. They cannot handle the truth, especially the fragile white males that are out here.
Let me ask you, let me give you an example. I'll give you an example. During COVID, when COVID started, there were those of us like me who said, I think this thing came from a lab. People listen to my show knows. I said, I don't think this is why. Oh, you're crazy conspiracy theorist. The government, oh, that's crazy conspiracy theory. Come from a lab. Who would say that? You can't say it on Twitter. You can't say it in it. There were people that called the station and complained because I said, I think it came from a lab. What has the government said now? Yeah, it came from a lab. They knew it came from a lab. The evidence is out there, but they hid it. And now they say, yeah, it came from a lab. That's my point.
I think that even that is kind of speculative because they haven't definitively proved where it came from.
The government told us it came from a lab. I'll put it like this. At first, they said it didn't come from a lab. And now they says it did come from a lab. And they attacked those of us who said it came from a lab. And now they said, you were right. All I can tell you is this. One of those is a lie. And why would they tell us it came from a lab now?
You know what? I'm going to support your position because it really makes my point is they lie to us because we can't handle the truth.
You think they lie to us because we can't handle the truth? Okay, well, that's certainly one option.
I'm not saying you and I, but on mass, people can't really handle the truth. That's why we create conspiracies.
I think they lie. Because if they told us the truth, we would reject our government. If people knew, let me ask you this. I always say this. I ask you one last question before I go to my next thing. Here's what I always say. If the Americans knew the truth, if American people knew the truth about American foreign policy, they would reject it soundly. Do you think that if Americans knew the truth people knew the truth about American foreign policy, do you think that Americans would accept it?
I would say some of it, I can't blanketly support that, but it's probably a lot that we wouldn't accept. But then I don't think all of it is probably bad, but it all serves some bigger idea than all of us are probably privy to.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate the call. All right, we got two more callers. Well, what an interesting call. I'm glad. You know, I like people to call and, you know, give me, hey, I don't agree with you or I don't believe what you say. You know what? I support that. So, you know, that's a good thing. And I like having that kind of, you know, banter back and forth. I think it's healthy for our society. The problem is we don't have enough of that banter. So that's a good thing. Thank you very much, latest caller. All right, next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, Garland? It's Max calling.
Talk to me, Max. What's up, brother?
So, I was listening to what you guys were talking about with the Russia stuff. It seems like, even though, sure, a lot of our stuff, because I've seen a lot of stuff, I saw that Putin had a high approval rating. It seems like a lot of that stuff still comes under like intense scrutiny. And I would say that also generally when it comes to like democratically elected leaders, in my opinion, which obviously Putin did win an election, but what I'm saying is that leaders that still are perceived as more democratic, I think they're more legitimized through bureaucracy. So they're the power, the, them having popularity actually doesn't mean as much as where someone like Putin, who is viewed as very authoritarian, they need to maintain the facade of popularity to legitimize their control and their power.
Let me ask you a question. Here's what's interesting. President Putin is viewed as an authoritarian by people in the United States, right?
Yeah. And by
Russian people.
Vladimir Klarza.
The Russian people love him. So, you know, here's my question.
But they
if the people
Wait a minute, here's my question.
If the people of a country say we have a great leader and we love him, and in the United States we got Trump, and we're saying to them, your leader is an authoritarian, and they're saying, no, he's not, we love him, but we got Trump. Now, if the Russian people said, you got an authoritarian leader, I'd say, you got a good point there, buddy. But for us to tell a country, it's like some guy gets married and he says, man, my wife's great. I love her. She's the prettiest thing. She's the apple of my eye. And some guy walks up, yeah, your wife's ugly and she's mean. Well, she may be ugly and mean, but to him, she's the sweetest thing in the world. And that's beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So here's my point. It's no business of a man to come to another man and tell him whether or not he's got a good wife. It's up to him. And it's no business for the United States to say to the Russian people who absolutely love Vladimir Putin, who see him as one of their greatest leaders ever. That's how the Russian people, that's almost indisputable worldwide, other than in the United States. Who are we to constantly say Vladimir Putin's bad when it ain't really our business?
It's a monologue. You're just monologuing. Like, my response would just be that, like, that it's already proven that people that were protesting the Ukraine war were snatched up and arrested. He can appoint up to 30 people on the federal council. When they suspended elections for 8 years, after they stopped suspending them, he controls governors in municipal regions.
My question, though, but you didn't get to my question. I'm saying the people of Russia love Vladimir Putin and they think he's a great leader.
And I'm
and every
you,
poll everywhere
that's
around the world
samples.
And all the Russians say it. So
why
how can you push back against what the Russians like with some go ahead.
Because it's not I'll tell you why. Because there's been numerous accounts of people that engage in free speech that get snatched up and arrested all the time for protesting. So they take the data samples of the people that like him, and then you have tons of people, because they're scared to engage in dissent, they just stay quiet. So they can just limit the amount of data, and they keep the people that like him. It's the same with what Trump's trying to do right now. Even though Trump hasn't been as successful yet, now so many institutions, media and all that, are capitulating to his lawsuits. They're quieting down.
So let me ask you this.
Everywhere.
So, okay, so maybe we got different positions. My position as an analyst is the data and the empirical evidence and my association with people who are Russians makes it clear to me that the Russian people absolutely love him, and that all of the polls showing 80 and 85 and 87% are accurate. I believe that because everything, including my discussions with Russian people and everything else, tells me that. That I believe that because the data says that to me. You're telling me you don't think that data is accurate, correct?
Well, not just that, but that we know that people have gotten arrested for free speech. There was a guy who recently,
unlike here,
on PBS front lines, who's been poisoned twice. There was a guy who was recently featured on the PBS front lines who was poisoned twice, and he was a prisoner, and then he finally now lives here in Virginia. He's taken refuge, and he constantly goes back.
What's
to
his
Russia
name?
To
who is he?
What he calls it.
Who is he?
I think his name's Vladimir as well, and I think it's Clark.
Vladimir what?
I think it's Klarza. I want to say it's Klarza. I don't know exactly. I watched.
Because I'll tell you why. Because when I hear those kind of stories, I do research on who it is and find out who the person is. Because just it's like North Korea. The United States gets somebody from North Korea and says this person escaped from North Korea and they're evil. They bring somebody over, some right-wing lunatic from Venezuela who's in the extreme minority, and say, we've got somebody to say that Maduro's evil. But they don't tell you that Maduro's got between 60 and 65% of the votes in every election, and the elections are clean.
So I can bring somebody to say that Max is a bad guy.
I talk with Max. I like Max. You seem like a good guy to me.
You just played right into my hand. Thank you. All right, we'll shift from Putin. Bukele has 90% approval rating.
I don't know who Bukele is.
Bukele, the president of El Salvador, and he took.
Oh, I don't know much about Bukele.
Oh, well,
be honest with you. I mean, I can tell, but I don't know that much. It's not something I know much about.
And he took hundreds of political prisoners. So it's like in your world, it's like as long as someone's popular, they can poison people, they can bomb their own country, and they can indiscriminately arrest people. But oh yeah, he's.
I don't know what you're talking. Max, you're getting a little carried away here, brother. I don't know what you mean when you say poison people and bomb their own. Let me ask you a question, Max. Let me ask you a question. Can I ask you another question?
You don't know anything that makes your opinion look bad. You don't know anything that makes your opinion look bad.
Can I ask you another question, Max?
Just run away.
Let me ask you a question. What are your feelings on Venezuela and President Maduro?
Oh, yeah, I think it's stupid that we're blowing up their boats and getting involved with
But what do you think about President Maduro? The United States government says he's a dictator.
Know.
He does all of this and that. And he tortures his own people. And he's a brutal dictator. That's the official position of the United States government. What do you think of him?
So I don't specifically know enough about that. I really don't. I actually don't know enough about that. But I do know that it's the best escape to say just because someone's popular, right? Which whatever that means, but, you know, they don't do bad things. And it's like I said, I know people here from Guatemala, right? And they like Bukele. They say the president of El Salvador is a great president. And all I'm saying is that when Trump sent 235 undocumented immigrants, some that entered in through parole, none of them were MS-13, none of them were criminals, and Bukele put them in his prison. So he's loved by his people. He's so great, and he's.
I don't know that much about him, but that's a. I'll put it to you like this.
I know enough about Russia.
Hear me out. I know enough about Russia to say this. My research tells me that the people of Russia. Well, I absolutely love Putin, is what it is. But I don't just believe the research. If you look at historically why, because when he came into office, Russia was in, they called the lost decade of the 90s. When Vladimir Putin came into office, Russia was in absolute poverty. When he got he's a lawyer and he has a PhD in economics. And one of the things he wrote as a dissertation was, this is how I would save the country. I would take these gigantic companies based on oil and gas and things like that, that would be state owned. And I would use that money to run the government and bring the country back. And that's what he did. And it worked. And the people made lots and lots and lots of more money. And Russia went from a very poor, poor country in the 1990s after the Soviet Union to it's now the fourth wealthiest country in the world. It's simple. I wouldn't even have to need polls. That's why people loved FDR, because when he came in, we were in a depression, and afterwards things were better. It's simple politics. If somebody's in charge of a country and the country economically improves, doesn't it only make sense? So when you take the polls and you take the historical evidence and put them together, it makes sense why they would like him. And furthermore, why is it our business to tell the Russians and the Venezuelans and the Chinese who they should like as their leader? I never understood that.
They can like whoever they want. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying we should be at war. Most of the Ukrainians don't even want to fight anymore. It's all conscription. I'm not even saying any of this. I'm just giving you my hypothesis. Trump is doing the same things that Putin does. Putin has military at election polls. Putin indiscriminately snatches people who protest the war in Ukraine. Former employees of the FSB have been poisoned. When the Chechen bombings happened in 1999, they caught FSB police planting bombs in Ryazan, the same bombs that went off in Moscow. Putin has statewide control of the media. Trump wants statewide control of the media. I'm not telling you we should fight Russia, leave Russia, any of that. I'm just telling you that Putin has suppressed all dissent and that he is able to maintain this aesthetic of popularity because the fat cats love him.
Right? So just let me understand this.
With at the embassy, all the people you dine with.
But the aesthetic of possibility of popularity. So he's not really popular. He just makes it look like he's popular.
Yeah, they're scared.
But I don't know any Russians that don't love him.
Because they're all fat cats who have money. They're all fat cats who have money. You're at the
they're not.
All the people in D.C. All the fat cats don't have money and are dying.
I don't know. Oh, I'm just saying. Look, I don't know any Russians that don't love Putin. They love that guy. He is beloved in Russia. Americans, you know what's interesting? And do you know what the numbers are for China? 90 to 95% of the Chinese people support the Chinese government. And why is that? Because the Chinese government pulled 800 million people out of poverty. When you do that, the people are going to be happy. There's something consistent here, Max. When the governments deliver for the people like the government. That's why people don't like the government in the United States, because they ain't delivering for the people. And what the government does is say to you, forget how screwed you are. Look over there. Putin's evil. Maduro's evil. China's evil. Everybody's evil, except our government is not evil. It's a game, Max. And I buying it, but you can if you choose. All right, you get the last word, Max.
Yeah, that's not the conversation I'm making. I have plenty of problems with our government. I think that here so many of us are dissatisfied with the government because we can be. Whereas in Russia, the moment people go out there and start protesting, which in small numbers, plenty of people have protested the Ukraine war, they've been snatched up and arrested.
Well, the bottom line is this: you can believe that if you want to. But it ain't true. But
it is true.
I'll put it like this.
It is true.
If I believe the mainstream media and if I believe this crap, I'd think it was true. That Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Maduro's
That's a
dictator. The Chinese Communist Party, they're out to get everybody's bad. I don't buy it, dude.
We're bad.
And
Trump's
I don't buy it
Trump's
because I do research.
Well.
That's why I don't buy it. All right. Anyway, we got another caller. We're jumping to the next caller. And that's, I love Max. I'm glad he calls every week. And basically, it's Putin's evil, Putin's evil, Putin's evil. They're telling us the truth. Now, think about this. The official position of the CIA, the official position of the neocons, of the nastiest, most evil warmongers that you could ever get your hands on is Putin's evil, Chinese evil, China's government's evil, Maduro's a dictator. Those people are not telling you the truth, but... All right, 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Tabu, and I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Tabu, what's happening?
You touch on some very key points. I hope Max is still listening, and I wish you could maybe, when you say it's a game, maybe we need to explain the game to Max. First, on Russia... My understanding and my knowledge tells me that when this country started, Russia refused to support Great Britain at the time, our enemy.
Russia actually helped the United States during the Revolutionary War. They sailed their armada into San Francisco Bay and I think New York Harbor. So the U.S.
That was a civil war, but I'm starting out with...
I'm pretty sure. Well, at any rate, go ahead.
Well, you're right. Yeah, well, you're right. They did it then, but I'm trying to show they've been with us, the United States, all along, right from the beginning. But if you go up to the civil war, the civil war would have been lost had Russia not sent, just as you correctly said, they sent their fleet, a fleet in the West Coast and one to Canada. And it said to the world, if you invade, we will set the world ablaze. What's going on? They sold us Alaska. Right now, the world's greatest technological home, it was Russia, the International Space Station. It was Russia who took us astronauts there when our system failed. So the U.S. and Russia have been our allies. Now let's look at our enemies. Started off when the country started, it was Great Britain.
If you ask me.
Hmm?
I said, still is Great Britain, if you ask me.
That's the point I'm trying to get at, and that's the game that you're talking about. That global, the whole war, neocons, the warmongers, controlled by the globalists. Now that's the game we need to look at. And all with all of these wars all over the world that has been going on, Trump is trying to stop. And this is where I would like, I want to ask you a question. Do you think Trump is trying to stop all of what has been going on, all that warmongering and everything? And let's take issue by issues.
Well, I'll answer that. No, I do not think Trump is trying to stop the wars.
Okay. Okay.
I'll answer that. No, I don't think Trump stops. In fact, I'll go one further. I don't think Trump's got the power that people think he has. In the same way that when Joe Biden was wandering around stage, couldn't find his way off stage, and everybody was like, is something wrong with Joe Biden? He's not quite right. I was like, yeah, but he ain't the president anyway. He is a voice for the power. And I feel the same way Trump. In fact, I'll say right now, I think Trump's losing it a little bit. I don't think he's as sharp. We got Biden 2.0 here. I think Trump's losing it. But I don't think that Donald Trump is some peacenik. I think Donald Trump is going to fill his pockets as best he can, and he's going to do exactly what his donors tell him to do, nothing more and nothing less. Of course, he's a bit of a narcissist, so he's going to always try to make himself look good. So that is my thoughts of Donald Trump. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, well, let's deal with these issues, because, you know, you have an excellent program. I appreciate you, but let's see if we can come to some solutions here. Now, you asked a question earlier in the program. You said, what's happening now? Now, that's key. Mm-hmm. Now, let's just deal with, you talked about Venezuela. Let's just deal with that one issue for the time being. Oil, you mentioned. What Trump is saying, drill, baby, drill. We are talking about being self-sufficient. Get rid of the globalist control over us through the international banking system that has controlled all these wars.
Yeah, but he's threatening Venezuela. Bringing peace and stopping wars. The man got an armada of ships surrounding Venezuela, threatening to attack them in any day. That ain't no way to bring peace.
Is Venezuela killing Americans through its drugs?
Absolutely not. Venezuela is one of the least. Where do the drugs come out of? They come out of Colombia, right? Everybody knows the cocaine. And where is the Andes Mountain running through that's loaded with coca leaves? Peru. Venezuela is the least of the drug countries out there.
Are you denying that the boats that's coming with water, they're full of drugs?
No. Venezuela, I'll put it like this. You can believe that the United States is threatening a country that has more oil. Now think about it. Venezuela has more oil than any country in the world. Donald Trump left office the last time, Donald Trump said, we should have invaded Venezuela. I should have took the oil. Now he said before, I should have took the oil. And now he's going to attack him. You think he changed his mind this time? You think it's over drugs and ain't over oil? Even though he said it was about oil before.
Well, we're trying to deal with issue by issue what he's talking about right now. Okay, let's get clear. Are you saying that you don't think those boats were carrying drugs that's being shot?
Let me just say this. I used to be a policeman, right?
And that's why I'm asking.
Let me ask you this. Could I walk up on the street and say, you got drugs, and shoot you? Wouldn't I have to search you? Wouldn't I have to have a probable cause? Wouldn't I have to arrest you? Wouldn't I have to find evidence? The United States can now, in the open seas, international waters, look at a boat and say, you know, that boat kind of looks like a drug boat. I think I'll kill everybody on board. With no evidence, present nothing.
Don't do that. You think that's right?
If it was a drug boat, I ain't saying it is or ain't. I don't think it is, but okay. Wouldn't the people on board have a right to at least be heard? Did you know that when the Coast Guard searched boats for drugs, when they suspected them, they only found drugs in one out of every four boats that they thought were drug boats? How do I know? That's what I used to do for a living. I was work on the bay. I worked with the Coast Guard. I worked with FBI, all that stuff. I used to do that for a living. One out of four boats that they think are drug boats are actually drug boats. So based on history, that means one out of every four boats that Trump blows up, the other three are innocent.
Okay,
do you think it's right to just say that's a drug boat and kill everybody?
No, but I'm sure you've been a police officer. You know how that works far better than I do.
Yeah, not like that.
okay, well, let's go to one other thing.
All right, we got one more minute and I got to jump, but go ahead.
Okay, the bottom line, you talked about the system. I'm assuming you were talking about the economic system.
The whole system, that too, yeah.
Well, let's look at the economics system. I'm trying to make a point of how I see Trump trying to solve many of the problems. And then you correctly say he's but one person. We got to get up off our hind parts and do some things. Now, for one, the Federal Reserve, do you feel it has a negative impact on our economy?
Well, the Federal Reserve is, she really shouldn't even be called the Federal Reserve, because it's owned by banks. It's not owned by the government or the people. But at any rate, unfortunately, we got to go, because I'm down to my last few minutes, and Robin Holden, somebody who has, unlike me, someone who actually has some talent, is waiting to do her show. So I got to run, but feel free to call back next week, and we can continue with this. I want to thank my main man, Kalia, for doing a fantastic job. Everybody, feel free to email me, garlandin@gmail.com. That's garlandin@gmail.com. Feel free to email me. You know, I love my house music and my old school, so we got a great song for you. I'm out.